New here, we're really glad you're here. Thank you for being here. Make yourself very at home. Just wanted to add one more thing. Melinda did mention about this. Today we're going to wrap up our current series, Mystery, Meaning, and the Quest for God. And then next week we'll begin another series called God at Work. We're going to explore for a few weeks the whole concept of work in its all its different forms. You know, some of us are at home, some of us go out to work, some of us are studying. You know, we do work in all kinds of different forms and shapes and forms. But exploring that as a field, a fertile field in which we can grow, but also a field in which we face all kinds of different challenges and struggles, as well as great joy. So we're going to, you know, that's a big part of most of our lives, right? So we're going to explore that whole dynamic. So that will begin next week. As I mentioned, though, we're going to wrap up today this series, Mystery, Meaning, and the Quest for God. And today's goal really is to kind of reflect back a little bit on the series so far, and to, you know, we've been kind of talking about very big, at times somewhat abstract issues, and so I just want to kind of, you know, use a metaphor, land the plane today, or try to right now. What I don't mean by that is today's where we're going to get all the answers, right? You know, so we've asked all these questions, and now we're going to come land with answers. What I mean really is, in terms of that landing, and today's title is called Living with Mystery. What I mean is, how do we live with mystery? How do we live with the fact that we have certain questions that go unanswered, that there are certain things that we don't know, there are certain things that maybe kind of disturb us that we don't understand or at least fully understand? And how do we live with that? And we can think of living with mystery in one of two ways, and I think we perhaps could think about it both ways today. One would be kind of, well, we've got to live with mystery, right? You know, there are things that we don't know, and it's an inconvenience, and we have to kind of put up with it, maybe survive with mystery, get along with mystery, because mystery is here whether we like it or not. There's that issue, okay? We're going to have to live with mystery because we don't know everything, right? We don't get everything. But there's another way of looking at living with mystery, which is kind of like living with mystery, like really embracing mystery in a positive sense, and living through it, and it kind of allowing mystery to bring us alive, for it to be inspiring and kind of fill us with awe and wonder and propel us into something really beautiful. So, and that's something that we have a real value for. It's interesting, when I walked in this morning, I was just looking around the room. You know, we've got these banners that kind of represent, or the words that represent things that we value, right? And we've got mystery over there. And if you just even look at some of these words, we talked about a number of these things in the course of the last few weeks, and you know, we've had this somewhat abstract level that we've been talking about, particularly I think in these times, you know, in the messages. But we've also had material each week where we've dug into that those issues, and there's been discussion questions, but there's also been practices, right? And I don't know how many of you have managed to do some of those practices each week, but those practices are there to sort of ground us, to take these thoughts, these challenges, these ideals, and ground them in our lives, ground them in reality. How can we live this out? How can we practice this? Or how can we even practice things that would actually perhaps lead to a deeper understanding, a deeper enlightenment about the sort of things that we've been talking about? Practices goes along with this thinking, right? It's like there's the mystery out there, and there's the real life that we actually have to live. Our vision captures that, I think, and many of the words we see around the room are actually in our vision. You can see, you know, our vision on our website. I think there's it's written out on our the community flyer that comes out, you know, every couple of weeks. You probably have a copy of that. Our vision is very idealistic. It's in that sense quite mysterious. You know, we talk about daring to dream of heaven on earth. In other words, we have this great hope that a better life is possible, that God hasn't given up on the world, that God hasn't given up on us, that new life is possible. So that's very idealistic and somewhat mysterious. But it's also grounded in the fact that we believe that transformation, that change, the world becoming a better place, us becoming better people, it begins with us, right? It begins not in us looking out and pointing the finger or even just dreaming great big thoughts, but actually saying, okay, I need to be part of the solution. You know, we want to be the change we want to see in the world. So it's grounded in practice. It's grounded in a reality. And today, what I want to try and get at is, how can we live embracing both those sides of our vision, both those sides of spirituality, the mystery and the practical. How do we hold those things together? And in particular, when we think back through the things we've been talking about over the last few weeks, how can we apply those into our lives? How can they become real? In the material this week, I want to again encourage you to take a look at that. There's no discussion questions. There's no questions about this, the content of this message, for instance. But there's questions there that are personal reflection questions to look back over the course of this series and to think about what's changed for you in terms of perhaps thinking or interaction with others. What's that journey been like for you? You know, it's been a while now. We've been on this journey. It also seems like it's rained every freaking week of the series. Don't you feel like that? I mean, maybe God's angry at us for asking all these questions. I don't know, but I don't think so. Would you stop raining? That'd be great. There's a mystery right there. Maybe it's not that mysterious, I don't know. We've been on this journey for, it's been 7 weeks, I think, of walking through this series. So let's reflect back, remind ourselves of some things that we were perhaps challenged by. And then what we're going to do is think through, okay, what's going to be different for me now? I mean, we've had some great thoughts and all the rest of it, maybe some great conversations, but in one sense, so what? What's going to be different in the way that I live my life, the way I interact with others? What practices, habits am I going to take on? Those are, I think, really crucial issues for us. So whether or not you've sort of participated much in this series done a lot of those other discussion questions or practices, this week would be a great week just to look at those reflections at a very personal level and think about living those out. Okay. Want to just sort of talk a little bit about this, the nature or perhaps why we've been on this journey, right? Why have we asked some of these questions? And, we said right at the beginning here of the series, we are a community of people who are following Jesus, right? So pretty much week in, week out, we make a really concerted, diligent, honest effort to follow in the way of Jesus. But that doing that means that we're kind of in a tradition. We're on a pathway that is a very specific pathway, right? There are many, many pathways. There are many, many people trying to follow Jesus in a different kind of way to us, and there's many people trying to understand God in a way that's very different to our Christian tradition. So it's worth us just remembering that we're part of a very specific tradition. You know, that tradition comes out of Judaism, actually. If we want to trace that pathway, we come out of a Hebrew tradition. Now, about 2,000 years or so ago, the Christian tradition emerges separate from Judaism. I don't think actually that was the intention, but that's what happened. There were differences of opinion, and so that pathway took a turn. The pathway originally, it wasn't a Hindu pathway. It wasn't ancient Chinese religious pathway. It was very specifically a Hebrew pathway. So we're kind of part of that pathway, right? So there's something very specific about it. We're now, as I say, that became a Christian pathway. Other pathways evolved out of that Abrahamic tradition. The Muslim pathway, for instance, that's not a turn that we took. Those of us here most likely are not Muslim, right? Because we're in a Christian church right now. Some of us maybe. That was great. You're very, very welcome here. But over the years, even as Christians, the path has taken a different turn here and there, right? So 1054, there was a big, what's called the Great Schism. The eastern side of the church, the Greek side of the church, broke away from the Roman side of the church. Or I guess they would say the Roman side broke away from the Greek side. But there was a schism. And, we had two very distinct pathways there. A few hundred years later, there was the Reformation, right? And a whole movement of Christianity separated off from the Roman Catholic Church. And then since then, there's been all kinds of other denominations and renewals further schisms. And we may have come from a tradition, a particular denomination that has a very specific pathway. And that's all great, right? We may have never been to church before. Perhaps this is the first church we've been to. But we are now part of a church that has its own tradition and is set in a very ancient tradition, one that I've just described. So we're kind of on that pathway. Now, periodically, I think we kind of lift our heads up and sort of look around and realize that, okay, this pathway is based on all kinds of presuppositions and assumptions, and it is very specific, it's very helpful, it's very grounded, it's very rooted. But sometimes we have questions about that pathway. Certain things don't work out, right? When we adopt a faith, we adopt a certain pathway that has a certain package that comes with it. And for the most part, probably that package works, right? The reason we're here right now is because something about it is working. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't be here. Something about it seems to make sense. Something at an intellectual level makes sense. It doesn't. We don't feel we have to be completely crazy to follow this pathway, right? Or totally turn our brains off. Something about it experientially works. We have some kind of encounter with spirituality, an encounter with God, an encounter with the divine, and it makes sense to us. But we also, I think, have things, you know, as we go down that pathway, we have things that make less sense or don't seem to work out or are harder for us. And those things cause us to kind of look up and look around and think and ask questions that may have previously been assumptions, right? And we've been doing that a lot in this series. I think we tend to be people, you know, but our church culture here tends to draw people who have a lot of those questions, right? We like to prod and poke things, and we're not sure about this, that, and the other, so we ask a lot of those questions. That is a really good thing. It's a really good thing. It's a good thing because, let's face it, if God is God, then God's got to be able to handle that, right? God's got to be able to handle that. It's good because otherwise those things are kind of nagging away at us, those questions. They're either there disturbing us. You know, for instance, you know, we might have like, are we the only way? I mean, have we got a monopoly on truth? Right? Does anybody ever ask that question? Is that a question for anybody? I mean, it's a question for me, right? Did we pick the right pathway? I mean, has anybody here thoroughly, exhaustively researched every single other religious option? Has anybody ever done that? So therefore, we by definition don't know if we've got it completely right. Would you agree? Because there may be somebody out there with a much better rationale, a much better approach, and we just haven't found it yet, right? And some of us may have explored a lot, but I don't think anybody's explored it exhaustively. But at the end of the day, it can't be about who's the most accurate, right? Who gets to be the most right? It can't be about that, because in one sense, none of us have got it right. And what happens is we sort of look up at these times when we have these questions or these nagging questions, and we just explore it a bit, and we realize, as we have done on this journey, that, for instance, we've talked a little bit about Eastern Orthodoxy. We've talked a bit about Catholicism. We talked a bit about other strains, even just within the Christian tradition. And we realize that maybe, you know, when we took those turnings along the pathway, maybe we gained certain things, but maybe also we lost some things. We missed out on some things. So we can learn from others. We can learn from others who are different from us. So this is a healthy thing to do. It's a positive thing to do. And we can do it confidently. We can do it confidently because God is not the great examiner, right, who's there sort of testing us. When I was at medical school, we used to do... we took hundreds of exams. I lost count of the number of exams I took. Like, I'm fortunate now that exams don't really freak me out because I've just done so many of them. And we would have these certain kinds of... The good thing about the exams I did was it was pass or fail. Or you could get a distinction. And if you got enough distinctions, you got some special honor. I don't think it was a cash reward or anything like that, so not many people were that interested in it. But, you know, basically, it was pass or fail. And now... I was very happy with that. Most of us were happy with that. We were happy to get, you know, a drinking man's or woman's degree, you know, where you know, I'll just pass. That's fine by me. You know, I mean, you never want to tell your patients that, but that, you know, we'll have some fun. Passing is great. I don't need to know my grade. Pass or fail, that's fine. But they also, at the end of every exam, there would be this thing called a viva. I think it was a viva voce was the term, which was a live exam, an interview. And you would be either required to attend or invited to attend. And a list would go up. And if you were on neither of those lists, there were two lists, actually, neither of those lists meant you're through, you passed, it's good, don't ask any more questions. But if you were invited, it meant that you could be up for a distinction. If you were required to attend, it meant you were pass-fail, you were borderline, and they were going to sort of check you out. Now, fortunately, I didn't have any of those pass-fail ones, but it had the... Not many, the odd occasional distinction one. Either way, they were pretty intimidating exams, right? You'd walk into a room, there's a panel of people there who were just basically trying to prove you wrong, who were trying to catch you out, who were trying to examine you, put you under the microscope, and test you. One of the ones I walked into, one of the guys was just sat there reading the newspaper. Like, he really couldn't, be bothered. This is boring to him. Some of you may have had some of those experiences. Sometimes I think we think God's like that. Like, God is sort of checking our theology, checking our belief system, checking everything out. What do you think about that? That's not quite good enough. God is not an examiner. So therefore, perhaps we can worry less about being right and having it all worked out and all sorted out, and more about living this thing, engaging with God, experiencing God in the here and now, in our very lives. And, you know, to do that, though, right, to do that, we have to kind of land again, right? You know, we have to find a pathway. Because it's one thing to sort of lift our heads up and have all these questions and to discuss those things, but to live, we have to kind of land back down and follow a pathway and have a way of life, some habits, some practices, and it really helps to do that in community, right? So that's why we have these traditions and why we have this tradition here. Again, what I want to maintain is that we can ask those questions and have those questions. We need to hold those questions in tension at the same time so that we can have a practical living, working out of our faith. And we're going to have to do that without answering all those questions, right? Our quest is not, let's wait till we've answered all the questions and got everything wrapped up, and then we can start living. But let's live in this process of uncertainty and at times doubt and questions, but also a joy in just living this out practically and really. We have a practical faith, a way that we live that out. And that's, again, what we've been trying to do through this series is take these questions, take these mysteries, and apply them into our own lives. So we've kind of been up there, and we're going to just try and come down a little bit. Now let's look at some of the things that we've explored over the last few weeks. We're just going to kind of do a quick recap of those. We've said, for instance, and some of these, you know, feel like a long time ago, right? But we said that faith is a process in which doubt and uncertainty are normal and healthy. Okay, faith is a process in which doubt and uncertainty are normal and healthy. We've just been talking about that. In fact, we talked about science and the fact that science has loads of doubt and uncertainty, and science is constantly asking questions, and that results in new, better understandings about the universe. Well, and we said that we're safe to do that. We can ask questions and challenge and change and change our minds about things, and perhaps have certain things that we thought it was very black and white. Now we see as more gray. That's a healthy process for us to be in. That reflects healthy spirituality. Okay, we talked about the fact that God is not a static object, but a dynamic being. Okay, so in other words, God's, you know, we talked about, you know, God as a force and God as a person and God as neither and both, you know. But we talked about the fact that, you know, it's not like God's a person who's sort of an objective person who's sort of out there on whom we project all kinds of human characteristics, who's running the universe, micromanaging the universe and making all these you know, at times seemingly unfair decisions about who benefits and who doesn't. But rather, God is this dynamic being. God is more of a verb than a noun. There's this creativity and life within God. We talked about Trinity in that light. You remember, we talked about Trinity and saw that it helps us see the divine as a dynamic relationship that defines love. So the Christian concept of Trinity is multiplicity, right? It's seeing plurality in God. We describe that plurality using our metaphors as Father, Son, and Spirit, hence the term Trinity. And we saw that that interaction within God defines love. The Trinitarian love, the interaction of those persons of the Trinity, is humble, deferential, vulnerable. It's not one trying to lord it over the other or one trying to get the upper hand. There's something beautifully egalitarian about it. And that defines love. Love is the very fabric of the universe. Love is defined by this humble, vulnerable, deferential love that we describe by describing Trinity. And we also went on to, out of that, talked about the fact that Creation is an emergent possibility flowing out of the complexity of three and one. That's a bit of a mouthful. But what we mean by that is perhaps this multiplicity within God, rather than a singularity, this multiplicity creates complexity, right? It creates possibility. It means that there's movement because there's this multiplicity. And out of that complexity, there are emergent properties. New things can evolve. There's new potentiality. And that perhaps is what creation is all about. Creation is this emergent outflow from the love of God. And so creation, all the creation, us and everything else, are all connected to God, are all part of God, that God is in it, we are in God, we are connected to one another. We went on to talk about that, maybe we can put the next point up there, Melinda. God is one with all creation through love, right? We're not separate from God, we're not separate from one another, we're not separate from nature, from all that's around us. Then we went on to break it out a little bit. We talked very specifically about this Christian tradition of Father, Son, and Spirit. We did that over the last few weeks. We talked about God as Father, a male metaphor, which, you know, God is not a man. God is both male and female, and neither male nor female. You know, but we use that metaphor of Father to talk about parenthood and the unconditional love of God, that God loves us. God loves creation. God loves humanity. God loves what has flown out of this creativity. And we talked about Jesus as the definition, what we would call the incarnation, the embodiment of this Trinitarian love, this humble, deferential, vulnerable love that risks being rejected because it's not controlling. We see that embodied in the person of Jesus, in that Jesus comes as a servant. So servanthood is kind of like the embodiment of this love. It's a servanthood that puts others first, that is willing to deny oneself for the sake of others. And that is the embodiment of this universal love. It's the what Jesus demonstrated, it's what Jesus lived, it's what Jesus called us to. And we in last week talked about how we kind of tap into that, or we experience that, we engage with that, the Trinitarian love, this oneness, this vulnerability, this servanthood. We engage with that through the Spirit of God, this third person of the Trinity. And as we engage with the Spirit, we are transformed. We come alive. We recognize that God is in us already. The Scripture says that. We looked at those Scriptures last week. And we recognize that God is all around us too. So we engage with God both externally. We sort of reach out to God. And we look inside and connect with God that way. And we talked last week about practices, just things we can do to increase our connection to God, increase our connection to the Spirit, so that we can live this kind of life. We can resonate, if you like, with God's love in the universe, God's love that is just emanating from the heart of God. So that's the journey we've been on. Okay, it was quite a journey, right? Now, if you didn't come to any of that, you're really lucky, because that took us hours, and you just got the summary right there. To everybody else, I apologize. It took us a bit of a long time together. Now, let's look. I think we got a couple of quotes about mystery, because we went on that journey, but there's a lot that's mysterious about it. Okay, here's Aristotle. Heard of Aristotle? About 2,400 years ago, so. Greek guy. It is through wonder that men now begin and originally began to philosophize. Let's assume he's meaning women as well there. This is a long time ago. Wondering in the first place at obvious perplexities, and then by gradual progression raising questions about the great matters too. For example, about the changes of the moon and of the sun, about the stars and about the origin of the universe. So they were talking about these kind of things, 2,400 years ago, and Aristotle's saying it's kind of like the bigness, the largeness, some of those things we've been talking about are like, whoa, those are good for us, because it's through that wonder that we can actually connect to this journey of understanding, this journey of discovery, this journey of exploration. Einstein, a more recent scientist and philosopher, said, the most beautiful experience we can have is the mysterious. It is the fundamental emotion which stands at the cradle of true art and true science. And we've explored art and science a bit in this series. Whoever does not know it can no longer wonder, no longer marvel, is as good as dead, and his eyes are dimmed. So this sense of mystery, this sense of unknowing, is actually, ironically, somewhat illuminating. You know, I think that's what Einstein's saying there, that we, by embracing mystery, by accepting mystery, rather than trying to conquer it or run from it or analyze it and defeat it, by accepting it and embracing it, somehow we understand more that way. Our eyes are opened, or our eyes are no longer dimmed. So let me give just a few reasons. These are pretty random reasons or perhaps results of embracing mystery. Like, why is mystery good for us? Okay, why is mystery good for us? Let's just look at a few of these. The beauty of mystery, right? It increases our desire and longing. Okay, mystery means that there is something out there to be discovered. And we have, I think, all of us, a desire, a longing for truth, for reality, for love, for acceptance. We're on a quest, right? I think that's true. You know, we've talked about this series as a mystery meaning and the quest for God. We may not necessarily think we're on a quest for God, but we're on a quest for something real, something meaningful. And mystery kind of takes us there. We embark on this adventure because of mystery. Mystery, we'll just rattle through these. It draws us deeper into the journey, right? Mystery can provoke us, can compel us, can push us out on this journey of discovery, push us into practices. Ironically, perhaps even push us into concrete action as we try to experience some of these mysteries that we've been talking about over the last few weeks. It helps us access the creativity of paradox, both and rather than either or. We've talked about that a little bit. Like, God is both male and female. Like, very often we talk about things in very exclusive terms, right? If we talk about God as Father, that's a really great thing. There are beautiful analogies and beautiful things we can glean from talking about God as Father. But that doesn't therefore mean that God can't be Mother. Right? You know, and if we talk about God as Mother, it doesn't mean that God isn't Father. You know, when we talk about these things exclusively and independently, we lose truth, right? We lose something. We could talk about God as both personal and impersonal. God is, you know, use the terms force and person. It doesn't mean God is either of those. They're just ways of trying to understand God. But just talking about, if we relate to and talk about God as a person, it doesn't mean that we're ruling out God as being, in some sense, impersonal. If we talk about God as immanent, present to us, it doesn't also mean that God isn't transcendent and removed from us and separate from us. Both of those things can be true. So the paradox of mystery actually, I think, enhances our faith. It creates a sense of wonder and transcendence. We've kind of dealt with that piece already. I mean, we have a wow experience, I think, when we think about these things. Rather than being afraid of mystery, rather than seeing mystery as an enemy, mystery is this, wow, it's incredible. It opens up possibility, right? Think of all the conundrums in our lives, the challenges in our lives, and the seeming impossibilities in our lives. Well, mystery means that maybe there's a way through. I mean, it's interesting we have mystery on the same wall as hope and journey. That mystery means there's a way through some things we just don't get, we don't understand, the things that confuse us, things that confound us, the things that upset us, the things that cause us at times to grind to a halt. Our lives are actually full of mystery. Think of it this way. How many times in our lives have certain situations that seemed impossible actually resolved or worked out, or we've got through them, right? Now, it may have been painful to get through them, it may have been difficult to get through them, and it may have felt quite unremarkable the way that we got through them, but we still got through them in a way that perhaps we could never have imagined we would. Now, here's what's fascinating to me about my life, and I think most of our lives. I have had several of those kinds of situations in my life where, before getting through that situation, I thought, I'll never get through this. I'll never find a way to cope with this. I'll never overcome this. There's no way through. It seemed impossible. And then I get through it, and stuff happens. And sometimes that's unremarkable, but it surprises us that we get through it. And rather than thinking, what an amazing miracle, what a mystery, that's incredible, anything could be possible, I just quickly get over it. and then I'm complaining about the next thing that I'm not going to get through, right? And we look back on our lives and think, and we just forget, and we don't even count those things as miracles or amazing things, and we kind of lose the mystery of it, right? It was too real. But if that's true, then what does that mean about all the conundrums I've faced now? There's possibility in those. It's not over, right? But I don't take the same level of confidence that I should have, having had all these previous experiences, into those future experiences. Why is that? I don't know. That's another series, maybe. But we're just sort of a little bit on the cynical side, right? That tends to be how we are. So mystery actually opens up the sense of possibility. What else does mystery do? Oh, yeah, keeps us humble, right? Keeps us humble. We don't know everything, and that is a good thing, right? Because for every single one of us, every single time, we have to face the reality that we could be wrong. I mean, really, I would say that about everything I believe and hold to. There's a chance that I could be wrong. Now, on some things, I think subjectively, yeah, there's a very high chance I could be wrong, right? And on other things, I'm not so sure. But I have to admit, there's a chance I could be wrong. That's not a bad thing, because that keeps us humble. It means that we are not dependent on our own rightness. We're dependent on something else called love. And then finally, it keeps us playful, right? Maybe this whole thing with God is not so much about getting it right, but it's about enjoying it, relaxing, falling into it, following this adventure, and not necessarily having all the dots connected, and maybe connecting some wrongly, but it looks fun, and it works out to a certain point, and then maybe we have to have to shift those dots around a little bit, but maybe we could approach life in a much more playful way, because perhaps that's how God is approaching life, in a much more playful, enjoyable way than we could ever imagine. So let's think of this in terms of how we could move forward. Okay, just to wrap up here, how can we move forward with this? We've had lots of lists. There's no more lists to go up, but I want to just give us four things that we could perhaps think about, especially as we do these reflections. First one is this: that, as we've just said, none of us has this worked out. Okay, nobody has it all worked out. So we should relax. All right, we should relax. It's not about getting it all right. It's about being honest and real. It's not about being in denial. It's not about just avoiding things, but it's not about having it all worked out. None of us has it worked out. Let's relax. Second thing, if God is love, and if there's one thing that I hope we would take away from this whole series, and if we boil that list down that I showed a bit earlier to one thing, it would be God is love. God is love. So if God is love, then everything's going to be okay. Right? We can fall into mystery. We can fall into the unknown. We can just kind of launch into it confident that God is love. God's not going to judge us because we made a mistake. God's not going to nitpick us. God's looking to engage with us and love us and embrace us. All right? So God is love makes it okay. Here's the third thing. Probably most of our progress along the pathway, most of our progress of discovery is going to be unremarkable, small things. Jesus said, in Matthew chapter 13, Jesus said, he used a parable, and he said, he told a story about faith being like a mustard seed. It's, big trees grow from very small seeds. He talked about leaven. He said, leaven is what you put in bread, and it's a tiny bit of leaven, but it affects the whole bread. And the small things we do, the simple things, the perhaps unnoticeable things, stuff that we were talking about even last week, some of these practices, some of the things that we're going to get to review in the material, it's the small things that might seem insignificant in comparison to all the big things we've been talking about the last few weeks, but it's the small practices, the small steps that make a huge difference. They make a huge difference. So let's be confident in taking those steps. Fourthly, and I think this piece is really crucial, and maybe we can put up the Matthew 11 slide, Sarah, that part of the challenge with mystery is trying harder not to try harder. Okay, yes, there's a paradox right there. We talked about this last week, that growth, transformation, progress on this journey is not about pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps or just trying harder to be better, trying harder to understand, trying harder to engage with God. It's about relaxing and allowing God to engage with us. And there are certain practices that help us engage with God. They're not about trying harder. It takes effort to do those practices, for sure. But they're more about letting go than doing stuff. And Jesus gets at this point in Matthew chapter 11. Jesus says, "I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from wise and learned and revealed them to little children." He's talking about mystery, right? "Yes, Father, for that is what you are pleased to do. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." So what we're trying to do here is just connect in that relaxed, non-threatening, non-forced way with the Spirit of God. If we could just relax into this mystery, if we could trust that God is love, if we could be okay with not having it all together, if we could be willing to do the small things, perhaps we could connect with this huge mystery of the universe. Perhaps we could engage with the very force and life of the universe, which is the love of God. And to illustrate that point, just to close us out here, I want to show us a video clip, okay? And it's about nature, okay? And I know I've talked a lot about nature and shown some other nature clips during this series. Just remember that there were about 120 other clips that I didn't show. Okay, so just bear that in mind. But let's watch this clip, and I want you to think about it in light of living our lives and doing small things that connect to a much bigger thing. All right, so we could put the lights down and run the clip, and then we'll go into a time of communion and meditation.
One of the most exciting scientific findings of the past half century has been the discovery of widespread trophic cascades. A trophic cascade is an ecological process which starts at the top of the food chain and tumbles all the way down to the bottom. And the classic example is what happened in the Yellowstone National Park in the United States when wolves were reintroduced in 1995. Now, we all know that wolves kill various species of animals, but perhaps we're slightly less aware that they give life.
Real and practical about it. We see there how just a simple thing, like the reintroduction of wolves, has this massive effect on that ecosystem and an effect on something that you wouldn't imagine you could affect, which is the rivers, right? Well, let's think about that. That gives me hope. Oh, there's another word. Up on the wall. That gives me hope that change is possible. Anything is possible. And if we think about the mystery of our own lives, the ecosystem of our own lives, small changes can make profound differences. If we think about the ecosystem of the universe, the ecosystem of our world as we know it even, small actions on our part, small acts of love, connection to that force of the universe, the divine essence of the universe, the Spirit of God, if we can make small actions, who knows what is possible? And I guess it's that hope of mystery or hope in mystery that I want to leave us with at the end of this series. And we're going to move into a time of communion where we're going to take bread and wine. We can take it at the front or at the tables here. But just to lead us into that, we're going to listen to a song that is going to be played to us here. And Scott and Rachel are going to play it. We're just going to listen. We're going to sing it a little bit later on, though, as we have our worship time. So, and I just encourage you, maybe again, Sarah, we could put the lights down. Just reflect on what's been going on in this series for you. Reflect on what we've seen in that video. Reflect on what is God calling us to in terms of mystery. What kind of response does it merit? Let's listen to this song.